Today I want to talk about consciousness forms, consciousness-forms. That's maybe an unusual phrase. I happen to like it, and that's why I want to use it. But you could think of it as beliefs that are alive. You could think of it as ideas that are alive. You could think of it as seed thoughts that seek to grow, like all living things do. I think that being infected with negative consciousness forms is as real as us having a cold or some other diagnosable condition. So think of that. Being infected with negative consciousness forms is really like having an illness, and in fact is responsible for illness and dis-ease in any area, not only physical, but I'm speaking of the idea of poverty or poor relationships, either personal or otherwise, you know, countries going to war, for instance. You know, my Sunday talks are really my exploration of ideas. They're not authoritative explanations of those ideas. They're exploration, not complete explorations and explanations. I like ideas. I like to think about them. I like to talk about them. And really, my purpose as an individual is to become aware of the factors that lead to health and to illnesses. I want to know what makes people tick. I have, ever since I was a child, trying to understand what made my parents tick, as well as myself and other people that I experienced. And if I can understand the factors that lead to health or lead to illness, that my goal would be then to be able to influence those and make them more positive, that is, perhaps be corrective in terms of what I do relative to those negative consciousness forms. Ultimately, this has been a goal for a very long time, and it's becoming clearer and clearer to me, and realer, actually, is that I want to know how Christ healed. And I want to be able to do the same things. I want to be able to help people heal the way Jesus helped people heal. When I was in college, one of the courses that I really enjoyed was microbiology. And it was during that course that I came to appreciate bacteria, protozoa, molds, and funguses, and so on, because it was the first time using a microscope I ever saw those things in real life. I've seen pictures of them in textbooks and so on, but to be able to look at them under a microscope as they were growing is a whole different experience. And so it was really interesting because we actually grew them in a microbiology laboratory. And so this is what we did. We took petri dishes, little round dishes that the bacteria can be grown in, and on some media. The media was, a substance that would provide a place for the bacteria to grow and to feed upon. And in those days, it was like agar. I think that's always a question in crossword puzzles. So what we did is a couple of different things. We took a petri dish of sterile agar and coughed into it, and then put a cover on it and put it in the incubator. We also, at the same time, took another dish and held it underneath our head and rubbed our hair so anything in our hair could have fallen into the petri dish, put a cover on it, put it in the incubator. And when we come back to that laboratory, I'm thinking it was about 4 or 5 days later, it was unbelievable what was growing in those dishes. And to me, it was a real eye-opener. So if you want to be involved in personal hygiene, this will really be very motivational. So to look at the petri dishes after we took them out of the incubators, which were really designed to keep them warm so they could grow, you could see all kinds of colonies of one type of bacteria and another type and on and on. And they had different characteristics. It was pretty impressive on the one hand, and it was somewhat amazing to think that we had this tremendous population of living forms in our mouths that we coughed up or growing on our hair that when it hit the petri dish and were put into incubators, would turn around and grow. Before the invention of the microscope, you know, these individual life forms, bacteria and funguses and stuff, until they got really large, were not really visible to the naked human eye. So we didn't really know that they existed. And knowing that they existed is really knowledge that's only several hundred years old. About the same time that I was in college, what was happening out in the scientific world was the invention of the electron microscope, and it was starting to come into more common use. And the electron microscope had magnification powers greater than the regular microscope, so that things unbelievably small, to include viruses, now were brought into the field of vision of scientists. So a researcher using an electron microscope could see these life forms that were unbelievably small, called viruses. We've always been able and have been trying for as long as we've been around, I suppose, to see things that we're not yet able to see. We're constantly striving to add more information to our vision, or, said a different way, to extend our vision to be able to see things that today we can't really see. I'm thinking back when I was thinking of this idea that the Geiger counter was an attempt to be able to measure the presence of radiation in the environment, even though it couldn't be seen. I mean, it was known that radiation, after the fact, could kill people, but before that, we couldn't really see its presence. So the Geiger counter in 1908 was invented as an attempt to, and successful attempt at that, to measure this invisible energy around us. So that's really cool. And it's really an indication of what we've been doing for a real long time. Now, even though we've been trying to do that as long as we can remember, there are some people that still subscribe to, if you can't perceive it with the five human senses, it doesn't really exist. It's only hypothetical and probably fictional. Now, I'm talking about the five senses using these enhanced technologies. I mean, the person says, oh, I can't see it with my naked eye. It doesn't exist. Now, I'm talking about the naked eye plus a microscope or plus a telescope or plus some sort of magnifying intensification technology or measurement device. If they don't have that device yet, they believe it doesn't yet exist. Seems odd, though, right, that this attitude, it's like, if we can't see it right now, if we can't measure it right now, if we can't perceive it with our five senses right now, it doesn't exist. That is so weird, because it would say to us, right now we have reached the peak of our awareness. We can't know more than we know at this moment. We can't see more than we can see at this moment. We can't hear more than we can hear at this moment. We can't feel more than we can feel at this moment. And most of us would go, well, that's absolutely silly. That's really crazy. That is not, it can't possibly be true, because knowledge is expanding every day. What we know tomorrow is going to be more than what we know today. It's certainly not standing still. When you think the fact of the world has only been unflat for about 500 years, right? Before that, oh, we absolutely knew it was flat. And now we realize, whoops, and have known only for the last 500 years or so, that it is not really flat. What strikes me as odd, because of my interest in healing, is the fact that so many diseases have unknown causes. The causes of major illnesses on planet Earth in year 2011 are still unknown, and it seems to be okay with people, which to me is really odd and maybe is a little bit scary. Now, no question about it, the treatment and the profit from those treatments is really very popular and multiply like crazy. But the knowledge about the cause remains obscured and apparently of limited interest. That's kind of weird. I think the causes of diseases are unknown because the pharmaceutical company researchers are so busy looking for physical things that can be patented and sold to the tune of billions of dollars to the consumer. Now, what does that mean? It seems very clear to me that the causes of these diseases are not physical. For the last 11 years or so, there's been an adverse childhood experience study ongoing in California, run by Kaiser Permanente, with support from the Centers for Disease Control, a U.S. government agency. It's commonly referred to as the ACE study, A-C-E, Adverse Childhood Experience. So this study has shown the direct correlation of mental, emotional, and physical experiences setting the stage for illnesses and behavioral dysfunction later in life. So let me just say that somewhat differently, that an adverse childhood experience is going to more than likely show up in misbehavior as teenagers, young adults, or older people. It shows up as dysfunctional behavior. It shows up as maladjustment socially. It shows up as physical conditions later in life. That direct correlation, that idea that the seed of an illness is planted during these adverse childhood experiences, seems to me a great indicator that if you want to look for the cause of a disease, if you want to know what's causing a disease, you've got to go back to at least that adverse childhood experience. There's another way to look at what happens to people who have had adverse childhood experiences, and this is really what I want to explore today. We already know this. The skin of a human being is the main organ of our defense. It is part of our immune system. It is a protective covering over our body. That it protects the inner stuff below the surface of our skin level of the body to prevent dirt and bacteria and other things from getting in it. That's, you know, there's no surprise there. The fact that the skin breathes and perspires, right? We sweat. The skin permits certain things to enter, and it prevents the entry of other things. It allows certain things to exit and prevents other things from exiting. Not only is the skin the primary protective device for the body, it is also the main organ of excretion, which is why a lot of stuff that no longer serves us exits through the skin. One of the principles that I concluded about living to be 120 and healthy is this idea. Don't break your skin. And the reason is this: it forms a protective bubble, if you will, or a bubble of protection around our internal parts. And you go, okay, it's a boundary, it's a barrier, it's a shell, it's a casing, it's a shield. It's an umbrella, a lot of different ways to look at that. You say, okay, that makes a lot of sense to me. We all know, or I would say most of us know, and have had this experience, that there is some sort of a spiritual skin or a spiritual field around our physical skin, around our physical bodies. There is some outer layer of our being that extends past the surface of our skin. It's been called Aura, A-U-R-A. It's been called Bio-Field, Biofield, and probably by lots of other names. Now, most of us could identify with this sensation of being stared at. You know, we're sitting somewhere, and all of a sudden we can feel, on perhaps on the back of our neck, the sensation of being stared at by somebody else. In this case, I could describe it as the energy of attention that is streaming from us, toward us rather, from this other person, was perceived by our biofield, by our aura, and it alerted us. We could feel it somehow. We got this signal that our biofield was being touched. Like, oh. And the fact that it's protective in nature and it was being contacted or touched by this energy stream flowing from another one, this could be really helpful to us. Could alert us to danger, could alert us to an opportunity to turn around and see if somebody is trying to identify if they really recognize us. They think they do, but they're not certain. So there are lots of good things that can come out of that as well. That energy field that surrounds us can, like the skin, let certain things in, certain signals in, and block other signals. It's safe to say that this biofield is electromagnetic. It's electromagnetic just like we are, just like our bodies are, just like everything that we can see in life is electromagnetic. And our biofield is attracting more like energy to itself. So depending on the frequency and the amplitude, frequency is number of times the energy wave could be measured in a unit of time, right? 10 times a second versus 100 times a second, those are different frequencies. Amplitude is the intensity or the power, you know, how it spikes up and down. So that's how energy is frequently measured, frequency and amplitude. And so the frequency and amplitude, the attractiveness of our biofield, is what determines what comes in and what's blocked out. It will attract like, and it will block out unlike. So you say, oh, okay, that kind of makes sense. So this electrical field around me that's blocking certain things and attracting other things, what determines what it allows in and what it blocks out? The nature of our thoughts and feelings. That's how we supply energy to our biofield. Through our thoughts and our emotions. If we think of what a farmer does in the spring as he plows the soil for the first time, we could say that he is breaking the skin of the soil. It's deliberate, of course. I mean, it's not accidental, and it's necessary to break the skin of the soil because the farmer wants to be able to put the seed that he's about to plant into a receptive area as compared to scattering it on the surface of the ground. Scattering it on the surface of the ground makes it more difficult for that seed thought, to take root. And it also exposes it to birds that can come and eat the seed before it actually gets a chance to germinate and take root. So he prepares the soil. He breaks the soil, plows it, gets it all ready, and then plants the seed in that soil. The seed is like a thought. Both the seed and the thought have consciousness, which means they're going to seek to grow, to be nourished, to heal, to be protected, to work, to survive, and so on. They're both alive. A seed is alive. A thought is alive. You go, never really thought of it like that. Many people don't. So just imagine that this exploration has some validity. A seed that's planted in the soil has a consciousness that will cause it to grow. But it's going to grow into whatever the nature of its consciousness is. I frequently say, a carrot seed is going to grow into a carrot. It's not going to grow into a tomato or a palm tree. It knows its essence, its identity, its beingness from its consciousness. There's no real variation there for a carrot. A carrot is going to grow into a carrot. I've got an ongoing spiritual research project in operation, and it can be found at thehealingcodes.com/spiritual research. One word, spiritual research. And I've asked questions about traumatic stress events or adverse childhood experiences. They're the same thing in my interpretation, that people might connect the damage to their spirit and a current physical condition that they're experiencing. Reviewing some of the 11 different categories that I ask about, I can see that there are some major ideas that recur. One is that abuse results in the breaking of the protective skin, in quotes, that surrounds the individual. The second idea is that the planting of the seed thought into that now broken open soil, if you will, of the consciousness, and that seed thought that gets planted and take root and grow. So the protective shield around the child can be broken, and then the consciousness of seed thought, or how about weed thought, can be planted in that child. There's another common theme that's occurring in these responses to the spiritual research, and that is neglect. And I can interpret neglect as the condition where the field around an infant or a child is empowered. Their sense of individuality, which of course this field would be the protective covering of, it needs to be empowered by care and nurturing and food and warmth and being cuddled or caressed and so on. But neglect says that empowering activity did not occur. And instead of this field around the child being strengthened by reinforcement of a positive nature from parents and caretakers, in fact, neglect says it didn't get powered up. It was allowed to weaken or just try to strengthen on its own without input from emotionally mature, wise caretakers. And I'm thinking that without this positive reinforcement of individuality as a person for this little baby, this protective, I'll call it a spiritual energetic field, the aura, the biofield, doesn't really develop naturally or fully in a child. So now their shield, their spiritual immune system, their protective covering is less than it could have been. I'm thinking we could identify that the consciousness of the seed thoughts got to be related to the consciousness of the planter. Now, in Christ Returns Reveal Startling Truth, Christ talks about the conception of a baby being the combination of the consciousness of the male, of the father, being delivered through the sperm, combining with the consciousness of the mother, as it is in the ovum, that these two consciousnesses come together to enliven this ovum. Now it's fertilized, and now all of a sudden we've got the beginning of a baby. Consciousness plus consciousness, and the mother is going to gather more energy over the course of this time in utero, on average about 9 months, right? The mother is collecting energy, collecting energy, collecting energy, collecting energy, magnetizing it, bringing it in, and it's being added to the physicality of this developing consciousness form, the baby, the embryo, and you go, that makes sense, that makes sense. So this idea that the consciousness of the seed thought being related to the planter makes sense in a case where there's been abuse. The recipient, the soil, the mother of idea, the child, the whichever we were, we're all of those in this scenario. We have this experience that what we're going to do is start to add our own consciousness to that form that's been planted by this other person, the loving person or the abuser. I think we do that with our thoughts, with our feelings, with our beliefs, and the interpretations and the conclusions that we draw about this experience that we just had. It was a loving experience, the meaning that we give to it, what it says about these kind of experience, what it says about us, what it says about life, what it says about people, and so on. And if it's been a negative experience, that is pain or overwhelm, then our interpretations and our conclusions feed that same way. I call the seed thought that's been planted a consciousness form. As I said, I like that phrase because it's becoming more and more real to me, as Christ says in the book, Christ Returns, that everything is consciousness and consciousness is everything. God is referred to as consciousness, universal consciousness or divine consciousness, and the state of awareness that Jesus attained was referred to as Christ consciousness, and where we're operating is referred to as human consciousness. But Christ is saying we have the capability to increase our consciousness to the state of Christ consciousness. And that is the goal that I have. And frankly, Christ says in the book, that's what everybody's goal should be. That's what we all should be doing. So if we think of a seed thought or a consciousness form, we could say, even though I can't see them, they still exist. I do know that ideas take form, right? You can have an idea, and you can look around your environment. I can see a glass of water and a cup and pads and pens and a computer and phones and stuff. These things didn't exist initially. Somebody shaped consciousness with thoughts and feelings and physical actions, and over time brought each one of these things into physical existence. They are symptoms of our consciousness and the way we use it with thoughts and feelings. That's true. Maybe there's other ways we can look at our life. So here's the situation. A child is affected directly by the consciousnesses of people around it. Now, that's obvious, right? If I were to say, a child is affected by the temperature in the environment in which it's in, you'd go, hello, that's so obvious. Yep. But the energy of other people are impacting a child because a child's force field, biofield, protective shell is not yet developed sufficiently to protect it from the bombardment of other people's energy. So an act of domination by one person, an adult for instance, on or over another person, say a child, is going to be an overwhelming energy exchange experience. The child is not going to have the capability to deal with this intensity, this amplitude, or this frequency of vibration that is being delivered. That vibration can break the shell of the protective biofield because it's delicate and because the child may not be able to process this intensity, this amplitude of energy, this voltage, if you will, that it's going to be overwhelmed and not going to be able to give it an accurate meaning. So it's disadvantaged from a couple of different ways. This idea of a shell getting harder over time ought to be pretty obvious to people. You know, I come from the east coast of the United States, and I understand what a lobster is. I understand what shells are. I understand, or like in clams and crabs and so on. And I do know that those things go through a particular time in which their shells are very soft, and it makes them more vulnerable to other things, like fish, for instance, can eat them more easily because their shells are not hard enough to be completely protective. And so over time, the solidification of shells in a lobster is what makes it really very strong armor. Now, this happens in so many different forms, the husk of coconuts and corn and you name it, on and on and on, have protective coverings. We do too. We do too. When this covering is removed from us, and when is it removed from us, I will take what Christ is saying in Christ Returns as being accurate representation, saying when the baby is withdrawn or delivered from the womb, it is now in a very vulnerable, non-protected state relative to the way it was before, in confinement, in contained, in a sense of security. So now what's happening upon birth is that baby experiences abandonment, right? The connection between baby and mother has been broken because the baby is on the outside now. Umbilical cord is cut. So abandonment was like, wow, what happened? And insecurity is like this sense of being protected now all of a sudden is broken, is no longer exists. And you can imagine that the meaning that a baby, an infant, with these vibrations of abandonment and insecurity, then experiences abuse in one form or another, or neglect, is going to filter everything coming in, all the environmental signals, through the energy of abandonment and insecurity. Say, wow, that's what goes on at birth? But I suppose it goes on at birth. It goes on at birth more or less, and you can imagine whatever the mother is feeling is going to be communicated really very directly to the baby. The same with other people in that environment, the doctor and whatever else is existing in terms of tension. But birth is necessary for the human consciousness to individualize. This is what we do as beings. We individualize. We're grown in certain environments, and then after time, we individualize. We take in the energy, including the meanings of the experiences, and those events that happen to us because of our individuality and this new process, we're going to see things in terms of our individuality. Said another way, more simply, we make things about us. This is about me, this is about me, this is about me. This happens when we're infants, and it happens throughout our lives to more or less degree. We can take responsibility for events and then bond with them if they feel good. Okay, that's good. I did that. Or we can reject them if they feel bad. And we can still take responsibility for bad things. It's my fault. I did it. I should have done something else. Or this bad thing wouldn't have happened. And if we take responsibility for bad things, we can end up carrying on rejecting to be about ourselves. We can end up rejecting ourselves. That is really where big, big problems start. It's this idea that the consciousness form of badness, and it comes in a variety of forms. We use that word to describe a lot of different things. But if this consciousness form of badness takes root in our consciousness, it can show up in a variety of ways. And this is how it would show up in our habitual thinking. It can show up in our attitudes or our moods that display regular emotional patterns, and Also, it can show up in our physical behaviors and activities and habit patterns too. And those things, our thinking, our attitudes, our emotions, and our physical habits can contribute to our happiness or contribute to our unhappiness. They're going to contribute to one or both of those things. And if they contribute to unhappiness, it's just a matter of time before ill health follows that as a symptom. We have tremendous causative power. The meaning, that is the consciousness of the energy that we give to the experience, is what grows in our soil. The conditions in our lives are really indications of the consciousness forms that have been planted in our soil and which we and others have added energy to over time. It's very easy to see the marketing of consciousness forms. Just watch television and see what consciousness forms pharmaceutical ads are promoting, what military recruitment posters are promoting. And you could see that they're trying to plant seeds in the minds of the consumer that, oh, if I buy into this product, if I buy into this military service, if I buy into this pharmaceutical chemical, I'm going to get the benefits that they tell me about or demonstrate so vividly. And they hope I don't notice the consciousness forms that they have to run through in the small print. Your head falls off, your arms and legs fall off, you know, and all the negative things. And they end up by saying, go ask the doctor if this is right for you. It's like if you listen to the small print that they just hurried through, you're like, wow, you'd have to be crazy to ask a doctor about that. And the doctor would have to be crazy to offer it to you. If I said the causes of disease are negative consciousness forms, and the remedy for disease is to stop feeding negative consciousness forms and to start planting and feeding positive consciousness forms, I believe I would be accurate. When a person has cancer, people are told, don't eat sugar because you will feed the cancer. But we're talking about physical things, so you're feeding physical things. You and I in this conversation are exploring deeper levels. Don't feed invisible negative consciousness forms negative energy because they're going to grow. Even though we can't really see early consciousness forms, later on, we're going to see their effects because they show up in our thinking, they show up in our emotions, they show up in our physical behaviors and our conditions. Sometimes you can see a negative consciousness form get activated in the face of somebody when you mention something. You want to see something happen like that? Yeah, this is what you do. You start a conversation about religion or politics and see what happens to that other person. Those consciousness forms that they have in their field about religion and politics can be virulent. They can be intense. And all of a sudden you see that person, you know, raging. You go, wow, boy, I really activated those consciousness forms. And they came out to protect themselves, which is why when you really think of it, how somebody can kill somebody else who has different political beliefs. Because these consciousness forms of political beliefs are virulent. They're unbelievable in their intensity in a lot of cases. And you look around at war and murder and all kinds of stuff going on all around the world, you go, what would drive that? And we could talk about a lot of different things, but unless we're talking about consciousness forms, I think we're missing the root cause of what's driving all this behavior. The good news of all of this is that we can stop fighting the physical symptoms. Now, I know that's profitable for a lot of people, but it's also been proven to be so futile. It's futile in medicine, in law, military affairs, and social policy. look at all the stuff, fight this, fight that, fight the, even people are talking about anti-aging. You're fighting aging, you're feeding aging. It doesn't make any sense to do it that way. And so we can stop that approach. And we do it all the time. It's really very simple. If we walked into a dark room and wanted to be in a lighted room, we wouldn't attack the darkness. We wouldn't fight the darkness. We wouldn't declare the darkness to be bad. We would just increase the light. We would use a candle or a flashlight or the light switch on the wall, something to increase the light. We would stay focused on what we wanted, and we would take actions in that direction. In other words, we would invest our mental, emotional, physical energy in manifesting the consciousness form that we found more desirable than a dark room. And there wouldn't be any of this mis-emotion. It would just, boom, boom, be really straightforward. And I think we can do the same thing by looking at any and every area of our lives and recognizing that to some degree we could consider them to be some mix of dark and light. Just that, dark or light. Doesn't make them bad or good, just two forms, dark or light. And now we could choose to focus on the consciousness forms that will grow into the conditions that we want. If we want more light, then that's what we would invest our energy in. And what would we consider light conditions? I don't know. How about health or meaningful work or happiness or prosperity or a developing sense of effectiveness or love or peace or any number of things? We go, yeah, that's it. That's it. In the healing codes, we look at unforgiveness as a major stumbling block. And in the context of today's talk, I want to talk about that as a consciousness form, unforgiveness. And I'll say unforgiveness is the human ego's way of trying to restore a sense of security to their relationships by hating the perceived cause of their pain. If I can put this fence up around me that'll keep me safe, if I can separate myself from an enemy, from a threat, from a saber-toothed tiger, from a danger, from something that I don't like. But it doesn't work. It doesn't work. We think we're creating safety by doing that, but what we're really doing is feeding a consciousness form that eats us from the inside out. The physical symptoms of unforgiveness and that process have been identified and diagnosed medically and labeled as cancer in other forms. And you would go, wow. So it's not cancer that's the problem. It's the consciousness form that led up to it. That over time, that vibration will ripple through the mental, the emotional, and then show up in the physical level as this condition. And I think that we can say that cancer, poverty, multiple sclerosis, all kinds of diseases, war, or any other form of disharmony that we can think of as a consciousness form that has been mal-influenced by human consciousness. We have distorted it. We have, through fear or anger or greed, either bonded with it inappropriately or rejected it inappropriately, and it's causing us all kinds of mayhem. So what can we do? Well, I can think of a few things, and I'm not sure of the value of all of them. So let me just talk about a couple of ideas. We can look at our conditions that we're experiencing right now as symptoms of these planted consciousness forms. I don't think that's so difficult to imagine that. The conditions in my life, in any area, spiritual, mental, emotional, physical, financial, family, career, social, leisure, political, community, maintenance, I can look at conditions in those areas as being symptoms of consciousness forms. The second thing we could do is review our lives and the lives of others we've been influenced by. Parents, when we start going back in time and see the energy patterns that they were involved in, how energy was exchanged with them and how energy was exchanged with us, now all of a sudden we're starting to recognize some formative events that may have contributed to our lives and conditions. The third idea is that we can identify some of the significant, and maybe to us, that is because they're subjective, the most powerful energy exchanges that caused us to interpret the meanings of those events, and then we would have drawn conclusions about ourselves, other people, God, life, and so on. So this energy comes in. That's one thing. That's the fact. The next thing is, and this is really maybe more important than the fact part, is our interpretation and conclusions, the meanings that we give to these. Because those interpretations and conclusions become the intelligence, become the consciousness in the consciousness forms, so they know how to grow. They will now try to grow to manifest that. And those things became planted in our energy field. But here's the part I'm not real sure about. If the law of cause and effect is always functioning, and our experiences are either sowing or reaping, right? We reap what we sow, and Christ is saying repeatedly through Christ's returns that this law is always in effect. We reap what we sow. Can we accept that the abuse that we received in this lifetime is actually the harvest of our previously sown thoughts and feelings and behaviors? I don't know. And this, if this is true, can we look at it and go, oh, this is a harvest. You know, I planted a seed sometime in the past. I don't know when. I don't need to know when. But because I know this law of cause and effect is true, this is the balancing. This is the harvest. And because now I accept that I was a causative participant instead of a victim, now I'm much more empowered. I've been causative all the time. My awareness, my participation, my consciousness has always been a part of this. Does that help me regain my causative power, my self of power, my sense of being powerful? Because when I look back at the spiritual research and I look at the events and the responses that people put, it makes me think that powerlessness is one of the dominant consciousness forms that gets planted in some of these traumatic events, if not most of them, the sense of powerlessness. And if we can take and plant the consciousness form of being powerful, we now may be lighting a dark room. So you have to explore this idea for yourself. Some 35 years ago, I was having a psychic reading done, and the person was starting to explain my relationship with my mother and talked about our previous lives together, in which case there was abuse, and that some of the abuse now experienced, if not all of it, was a balancing of abuse delivered in the past life. In other words, I was reaping what I had sown, and she was reaping what she had sown. And then I thought, oh. And for me, it was very helpful all of a sudden to stop looking at things from a victim point of view or feeling bad. Or it was like, oh, it's just a natural occurrence. You do this, you experience that. Boom. Real natural. No real big deal. This idea seems really simple sometimes when you can think, if we had a bad sore throat and went to a doctor and the doctor said, the living forms that we see involved in your sore throat, involved in this condition, is labeled by us as Streptococcus bacteria. However, why this particular consciousness form all of a sudden has gotten out of balance in your throat, we don't really know. If that conversation occurred, it would make perfect sense to us. We'd go, oh yeah, why did this consciousness form get out of balance? And, more importantly, what can I do to get back into balance? We wouldn't be thinking of Streptococcus bacillus. We would, in fact, be going earlier to the emotion and to the thought form that ultimately showed up causing imbalance in the body, disadvantaging the body's ability to heal and to protect itself. Now I think you and I can consider the situation a little differently. That sore throat or any other physical condition or any other condition in my life that I don't really care for, I could say I fed energy into one or more consciousness forms and perhaps I blocked energy to one or more other consciousness forms, and ultimately it progressed from the mental level through the emotional level to the physical level, resulting in either imbalance, if that's not what I desire, or balance, if that's what I desire. Changing the meaning changes our consciousness. Receiving greater awareness in our consciousness is the remedy for all of our ills. Choosing different consciousness forms to attach to the events that we've previously experienced and free us from the current conditions that are showing up in our lives. We have that ability. We are supported in this through the divine. I would like to end this service with a prayer. This is the pluralized version of the prayer from letter 8 of Christ Returns Reveals Startling Truth. Father, Mother, Life, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need and our highest inspiration. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know it is your will that we should be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know that our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal loving intelligence which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness. And as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care. Thank you. It is so. Amen.